Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, to another exciting adventure here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the Radio Chick, and you are listening to Southern Sense. And along with me, on the road, calling from his cell phone, is our coolest of co-hosts, Cool Mike. How are you doing today, Mikey?
Thank you. No longer on the road. Home sweet home for me. So I am doing great. Glad everybody could be here on this Friday, Labor Day weekend, of, as always, tributing our last day of August, and what is kind of established as the last day of summer, although technically it doesn't change. We're glad everybody's with us. Always a pleasure to be here with Annie. And remember, everybody, we will be posting our links in the chat room as the show goes on. Facebook and Twitter, we're reaching out to you. Come on, reach out and touch someone.
Oh,
Annie?
And I have an exciting and nice announcement to make. I've been working on a webpage for Southern Sense exclusively. And we'll have a link to the show and everything on it, and people can sign up to become members and get updates and find out what's going on. So very soon we're going to be launching our very own website.
Wow. Man, I'm over my head in this ball game over here. Wow, we can have our own website. Can I get a picture on there too?
As long as it's not obscene. Yeah, and people can post pictures of take a picture of yourself, listening to the show or a bunch of friends sitting around listening to it, and send it to us, and we'll be happy to put it up. That's just a good idea, isn't it?
That's a great idea. I mean, with Playboy Energy, I'm always handing somebody a can, taking their picture. That's an absolutely awesome idea. And, a lot of businesses do that, too. If you are wearing their T-shirt and you're somewhere, you stand by a sign that says whatever, city limits, or there's this place in Grand Rapids, Michigan, called Yesterdog. And all around their building are people who have T-shirts in amazing places, Far East, up North Pole, just everywhere. Southern Sense is reaching out to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Only announcement I have is just to remind everyone that here in Beaufort, South Carolina, we're having Lieutenant Dan Weekend, the third annual Lieutenant Dan Weekend. The link is up in the chat room. It's LDW3.com. So they can click on it and find out what's going on. It starts on the 13th, and they'll have a fishing tournament and special nationally known fishing guides on there. We'll have the golf outing on the 14th, where we will broadcast live from the club at Cat Island, the Sanctuary Golf Course, like we did back in April. And we'll have some of the vets with us talking on air, and people can call and ask questions and talk to myself and to the vets. And we had a blast last time, but listening to some of the stories just really, you know, it made you proud to be an American, but it also made you want to cry for what these men and women have gone through and what they continue to go through. And you know what? You know, their attitude is, hey, I'm here, I'm blessed, I'm alive, and I'm moving forward. And it's fantastic, really, really fantastic. So people can join us on the 14th for that. Also, we got a couple of good shows coming up. Tuesday, we're going to have Dr. Kaufman, Michael Kaufman. He's an expert on Agenda 21, so that's going to be really good. And after that, we have an author coming in, Rich Mittner. He's got a new book out, Leading from Behind, about Obama. And that's been hitting all the major TV stations and shows and so forth. But we'll be honored to have him with as our guest next Friday. So we got a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
Awesome. Well, and I really like your show dedication today. That's one that really hits home for me as far as our tribute to our troops.
Well, this dedication goes out to the 241 members of the military who lost their lives in the 1983 Beirut bombing attacks. Many of you out there probably were not even born at the time this happened, and maybe you're not completely aware of what the entire story is. So today our dedication is to these men and women who lost their lives in a single act of terrorism.
All right. That was a big one.
Yeah. It was. And at that time, I was married to my first husband, who was a gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps at 2nd Battalion, 1st MARDIV. And he knew some of these men and women that lost their lives that day. 241 lost it all at once. I bet there was not a single active duty Marine who did not know someone who passed on that day. So this is dedicated to those men and women. All right. The Beirut bombing attacks occurred on October 23, 1983, in Beirut, Lebanon, during the Lebanese Civil War, when two truck bombs struck separate buildings housing the United States and French military forces. The members of the multinational force in Lebanon, killing 299 American and French servicemen. The organization Islamic Jihad claimed responsibility for the bombing. Suicide bombers detonated each of the truck bombs in the attack on the American Marine barracks. The death toll was 241 American servicemen, 220 Marines, 18 naval personnel, and 3 Army soldiers, along with 60 Americans injured, representing the deadliest single-day death toll for the United States Marine Corps since the Battle of Iwo Jima of World War II, and the deadliest single-day death toll for the United States military since the first day of the Tet Offensive during the Vietnam War, and the deadliest single attack on Americans overseas since World War II. In addition, the elderly Lebanese custodian of the Marines building was killed in the first blast. The explosives used were equivalent to 5,400 kilograms. That equals 12,000 pounds of TNT. In the attack on the French barracks, the 8-story Dakar building, 2 minutes after the Marine attack, 58 paratroopers from the 1st Parachute Regiment were killed and 15 injured in the single worst military loss for the French since the end of the Algerian War. The French also lost the wife and 4 children of a Lebanese janitor at the French building. The blast led to the withdrawal of the International Peacekeeping Force from Lebanon, where they had been stationed since the withdrawal of the Palestinian Liberation Organization following the Israeli 1982 invasion of Lebanon. At around 6:20 a.m., a yellow Mercedes-Benz truck drove to the Beirut International Airport, where the 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, under the 2nd Marine Division, had set up its local headquarters. The truck was not the water truck they had been expecting, but a hijacked truck carrying the explosives. The truck turned onto an access road leading to the Marines' compound and circled a parking lot. The driver then accelerated and crashed through a barbed wire fence around the parking lot, passed between two sentry posts, crashed through a gate, and drove into the lobby of the Marine headquarters. The Marine sentries at the gate were operating under rules of engagement that made it very difficult to respond quickly to the truck. Sentries were ordered to keep their weapons at condition 4, which means no magazines were inserted and no rounds were in the chamber. By the time the two sentries were able to engage, the truck was already inside the building entryway and armed. The suicide bomber detonated his explosives, which were equivalent to 12,000 pounds of TNT. The force of the explosion collapsed the four-story building into rubble, crushing many inside. According to Eric Hamill in his History of the Marine Landing Force, he writes, "The force of the explosion initially lifted the entire four-story structure, shearing the bases of the concrete support columns, each measuring 15 feet in circumference and reinforced by numerous 1 3/4 inch steel rods. The airborne building then fell in upon itself. A massive shockwave and a ball of flaming gas was hurled in all directions. The explosive mechanism was a gas-enhanced device, probably consisting of propane, butane, hexane, or acetylene, placed in proximity to a conventional explosive such as Primacord, all of which were readily available on the retail market. The bomb was carried in a layer of concrete covered with a layer of slab marble to direct the blast upward. Despite the lack of sophistication and wide availability of its counterpotent parts, a gas-enhanced device can be a lethal weapon. These devices are similar to fuel-air or thermobaric weapons, explaining the large blast and damage." Rescue efforts continued for days. While rescuers were at times hindered by sniper fire, some survivors were pulled from the rubble and airlifted to the USS Iwo Jima located offshore, and or to the hospital in Cyprus, or to the U.S. and German hospitals in West Germany. The last survivor pulled from the rubble, United States Marine Corps Lance Corporal James Young Jr., had been buried for over 52 hours. A Beirut memorial has been established at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune and has been used as the site of annual memorial services for the victims of the attack. A Beirut memorial room at the USO in Jacksonville, North Carolina, has also been created. The Armed Forces Chaplaincy Center, the site of chaplain corps training for the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force at Fort Jackson, Columbia, South Carolina, includes the partially destroyed sign for the Beirut Barracks Chapel as a memorial who died in the attacks. So this show is dedicated to the 241 service members killed October 23rd, 1983. And in remembrance of them, we want to play a song, Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America, as if I can pull it up here, get my screen cleared. And just remember, you can pick up Todd Allen's song, My Name is America, directly from his website. You can download it, or you can go directly to his website and download it there. So this is dedicated to the 241 who lost their lives in 1983 in the Beirut Barracks bomb.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open.
My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. Again, you can download it directly from his website, and you can catch him on YouTube. We got a special guest in on the house today. His name is Larry Pratt. He is the Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. Good afternoon, Mr. Pratt. You're on live with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie, and we have my co-host, Cool Mike, with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it is a pleasure. It is a pleasure. There is so much that's been going on lately. It makes your head spin because they're trying to hit us, attacking the Second Amendment from so many different directions. And every time there's a shooting like there was just recently up in New Jersey, all of a sudden you hear the gun control people coming out of the woodwork going, see, this is why we can't have weapons. What do we do?
Well, we point out to them that it was their policies that have contributed, if not actually enabled, all of the mass murders that have occurred in this country since the point in the 90s when we began to fiddle as a matter of national policy with the idea that somehow we'll be better off with gun-free zones. All of those mass murders, save one, have been in what was legally a gun-free zone. And the exception was in a de facto gun-free zone. It was at a town hall meeting of Democrat Gabby Gifford, the representative who was shot by a Looney Tunes. As a bunch of Democrats, you could almost be assured that nobody's going to have a gun, even though it's Arizona, and you don't even need a permit to carry concealed. But none of those folks did, and they had to wait till someone else could run up to the scene and put an end to the killer.
Yeah, now, you started the Gun Owners of America back in 1975, and you've been at this for quite a long time. What made you do another organization similar to the NRA, but not the NRA?
Well, I wish I could take credit for having started it. I have been here as the first executive director, but it actually was the brainchild of the California State Senator, Bill Richardson, who had been on the board of the NRA and saw that they were just institutionally incapable of reacting in a timely fashion, of selecting candidates on the basis of how much they would stand up even to their own leadership. We've been looking for game changers, and all too often the NRA is simply looking for somebody that they can have access to. Well, you can have access to a lot of really bad people, and you're not going to advance your agenda that way. So we saw that there was a lack of understanding of how the political system really works, and from that flowed the formation of Gun Owners of America.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had gotten some of your emails, and over the years I said, yeah, I'm going to join. Well, I finally got off my keister and finally sent you in my check. So now I am officially one of your members.
I am delighted to be being interviewed by one of our members. Thank you so much. And we would encourage people to go to gunowners.org and do what you did and just get on those on the email list, because that's, as you know, one of our primary tools for lobbying the Congress. It's a way of sending out an alert with an embedded email, and then that goes off to the appropriate member of Congress so that they know what the folks back home are thinking.
Yeah, Mr. Pratt, I don't mean to play devil's advocate here, but, I mean, people like Joe Biden and Maxine Waters and our president and Sheila Jackson Lee, all these good citizens telling us how bad it is to carry guns and firearms and, you know, how do you debate these really highly intelligent people when they say the less guns, the less murders?
Well, first of all, they must have heard from enough of their folks back home that you'll notice an increasing reluctance to pursue gun control measures. Maybe that's not true in San Francisco or Brooklyn, but overall, politicians are getting the message that if I start fooling around with my folks' guns, they're just going to fire me. They have the effrontery of looking at me as a mere employee rather than their exalted ruler. And people who own guns are particularly prone to that point of view. And that was, of course, what got us started as a free nation when George III and his parliament were lording it over us. We said, you know, you're violating all kinds of agreements. You're violating Magna Carta from the 13th century. You're violating the Bill of Rights from the 17th century. You're violating all the contracts that establish colonial charters. Stop it or we're going to shoot back at you. And that's how we got started, because we had the ability to do that. We're a free nation. And that's, I think, why firearms have remained part of the warp and woof of the American psyche, because no matter how much brainwashing we've been subjected to in the government schools with zero tolerance and guns are bad and they are only designed to kill people, well, you're darn right. The first gun I ever bought, waking up from having been a city boy in the Northeast, was during riots in 1968, when the police had said we may not be able to contain the rioting and it could break out along some of the following corridors leading out of town. Well, I lived on one of those, and I thought, I've got a young family. I got to go get me a gun, so in case I need to defend myself, I got better chance than my fists. And that's why I went and bought a shotgun, because I figured at least that way I didn't have to be Annie Oakley.
Yeah, matter of fact, I grew up not too far from you. I was on Long Island, and I actually happened to be in retired NYPD out of Brooklyn. So it's funny you mentioned Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's really amazing that the larger urban areas seem to have, and I imagine that's a subject of another discussion, but for whatever reason, it's produced people who seem to be more prone to thinking, well, the government will take care of that for me. And the more into rural and even ex-urban areas you get, the more people are saying, listen, I am not enjoying the conveniences of the city precisely because I don't want to have those creeps lording it over me. I want to be free. I want to do what I want to do. Leave me alone.
Well, this is true, and this is one of the things I keep on saying. This is not something that we're going to be talking about, but the Agenda 21 mentality, that if they crowd us into the cities, they crowd us into housing that they provide us for, we then become so dependent and so lazy, we forget how to survive outside of a city.
That was precisely the strategy of Romanian communist dictator Ceausescu, who depopulated rural areas concentrated the victims in these ugly communist high-rises and then accomplished his control over the people. Well, eventually people break, and when the what would we call it, the Eastern European Spring came, they took out dear mother and father, Ceausescu and his wife, and put those bloody dictators up against a wall and shot them without so much as a yeah, but.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I have a short little 30-second clip. Eric Holder, and this is back in 1995, and when I heard this thing, I went, the fact that he made this public statement just goes to prove that the tiger doesn't change his stripes. This is just a little 30-second clip, and I want you to comment.
So much better than last year.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong clip. It just
sounded like a Holder losing it.
So back in 1995, he was having a speech, and in the speech, he was recorded as saying to the effect that we have to keep on brainwashing people so that they can accept us, our gun control. And that
he made an analogy to something else where we had been brainwashed into accepting what the elite wanted, and that was the context of his remark. And it's rather Orwellian. It's the idea that somehow human beings are manipulable to the point that if the regime monopolizes information input, then they can accomplish brainwashing. And you know what? To a certain extent, I think that's absolutely true. And it's only when people reach a point the way they did in the Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe where they say, this is a bunch of baloney. I remember a fellow that had been present when Boris Yeltsin, part of that dissolving of the Soviet Union, Boris Yeltsin had made his first ever trip outside the Soviet Union. Now, he knew things were bad, and he'd been part of the dismantling of the grip of the KGB on Russian people's throat. But he was basically doing it because we've had enough. Well, he gets out to the United States, and he's being driven around mile after mile after mile after mile of prosperity. And he took to looking out the window with a glazed look, saying, they lied to us. They lied to us. So even the leadership of which he was part had bought into that whole narrative that it's sort of what Barack Obama is trying to get us to believe today, that America's a terrible place, that we've raped the rest of the world, we deserve to be downsized, we deserve to be made poorer because we're such a terrible place. Hello? Would you look out the window the way Boris Yeltsin did?
That is a fantastic, fantastic one. Talking about lying to us, why don't we start with Fast and Furious? Being retired law enforcement, it caught me as soon as border agent Terry had been killed, Brian Terry, and I started following the investigation, and I'm saying, this stinks. It smells really bad. And I said, there's something more behind it. And then I started looking in, and then the Sipsey Street gang started making their reports, and that's when all the bells and whistles went off. Now, Eric Holder claimed, as late as just last year, that he knew nothing about it.
I know nothing. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. He's gotten himself into a crack. And by the way, a hat tip to you and all the other new media, talk radio, websites, email alerts. Because of that, and to some extent, Fox News and even CBS Evening News with Cheryl Atkinson, who stands out as a bright light in a land of shadows, she really did a number on Fast and Furious early in 2011. But it's because of what we can call the new media, as opposed to the Democrat media, that a growing number of Americans know that our government embarked upon a plan to get random people. They didn't have a list of who was going to get murdered, but they wanted people to get murdered because then with guns that they were keeping a list of, they could trace back to American gun stores, American gun sellers, and say, oh, our bad, we need more gun control. And we now have documents from whistleblowers that absolutely establish what I just said as the clear intended policy. And evidently it might go up into the White House, because the invoking of executive privilege is only intended to protect the political safety, the physical safety, perhaps, in keeping out of jail, the President of the United States. And it's been invoked, I think, quite improperly, and ultimately probably will be determined to have been so, to protect people way up in the administration who knew about, who maybe didn't conceive of but approved of, even as Richard Nixon didn't know of but approved of, Watergate after it had happened. And once you're a part of a cover-up, buddy, you own all the crime.
Absolutely. Now, there is a clip that I have that is David Ogden, and this is March 2009, and he's announcing a launch of an upgrade and updating on Fast and Furious. And it's curious who he names on who he consulted and approved the project. So I find it very hard for two people to deny any knowledge of it. This is David Ogden, March 2009.
The President has directed us to take action to fight these cartels, and Attorney General Holder and I are taking several new and aggressive steps as part of the administration's comprehensive plan. Those steps include the following. DOJ's Drug Enforcement Administration, which already has the largest U.S. drug enforcement presence in Mexico, with 11 offices in that country, is placing 16 new DEA positions in southwest border field operations, specifically to target Mexican trafficking and associated violence. The DEA is also deploying 4 new mobile enforcement teams to specifically target Mexican methamphetamine trafficking, both along the border and in U.S. cities impacted by the cartels. DOJ's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is increasing its efforts by adding 37 new employees in 3 new offices using $10 million in Recovery Act funds and redeploying 100 personnel to the southwest border in the next 45 days to fortify its Project Gunrunner, which is aimed at disrupting arms trafficking between the United States and Mexico. ATF is doubling its presence in Mexico itself from 5 to 9 personnel working with the Mexicans specifically to facilitate gun tracing activity, which targets the illegal weapons and their sources in the United States.
That last statement is an absolute lie. They were going to any length they had to keep the Mexicans in the dark. That is a simple fact. We know that for sure. And, of course, that wasn't the only thing that was a lie, but that one really jumped up and smacked me, because now we know so much that to indicate beyond any doubt that is a lie. So here we've got a guy who takes an oath to uphold the Constitution, and all he can think of is lying about Murder Incorporated, which he's involved in.
And also the fact that he said that we're going to be tracing the guns. They never traced it.
That's a belly laugh and a half. They specifically did not want to trace the guns. In fact, even though I think there should be no Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, because I don't think it's constitutional, the personal integrity of the agents who came forward as whistleblowers, putting their careers on the line, and in some cases even their lives, because these are vicious people, and they'll let a cop go out in an exposed position and not cover him. And these were guys who finally had enough after observing the umpteenth sale to an illegal buyer, saying, okay, shall I make the pinch now? No, come on back to headquarters. And so that's what drove the whistleblowers finally to come forward, even publicly, and say, this is wrong. We told them this was going to get people killed. And after Brian Terry was murdered, they didn't know about the hundreds of Mexicans. But after one of their own in a sister organization, law enforcement organization, was murdered, that's when John Dotson, followed by some others, came before the camera of Carol Atkison initially and said, this is a monstrous program that's been underway.
Now, one of the people that were involved in this program, I forget his name now, he's currently on leave, but he's still collecting a BATF check,
Bill McMahon, and he was allowed to go to work with, I think I got this right, it was one of the big banking firms in New York, either Goldman Sachs or, no, J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan for a six-figure salary. So he's double-dipping. It strikes me as a way of keeping this man's mouth closed. And I believe he's been assigned by J.P. Morgan to the Philippines. This is another tactic that they have tried. Some of the other culpables have been activated in the National Guard and sent to serve in Iraq. And they'll go to any lengths. These guys don't play by the rules.
I think it's unbelievable how the names I mentioned before, these people are not only protected, Larry, such as Sheila Jackson Lee, the vice president, they have basically an army surrounding them to protect them. And are they using knives? No. Are they using baseball bats? No. Firearms. Yet they think for you and I, or for Annie or anyone else, somehow it's I've noticed people who are carry CCWs, people who understand not just guns in general, but sportsmanship and riflemen. That has been part of our tradition going way back to the Declaration of Independence as far as competitions, etc. But I think it's amazing they're basically saying that we should not be carrying firearms, yet it's okay for them to have surroundings of security that do carry firearms.
The first time I picked up on this was probably over 30 years ago when Jane Byrne was mayor of Chicago.
Oh, God.
And she went in to testify in favor of banning guns. They had some freedom left at that point. She's the one that got rid of the rest of it. And she's made the kind of arguments that you're pointing to, that nobody really needs a gun. It's only something for law enforcement. So nobody needs a gun. And there she is, surrounded by a semicircle of six, seven armed police officers. Well, of course she doesn't need a gun. I wouldn't need a gun either if I could afford that kind of protection. But then she couldn't either. It's just that you and I and people like us, at least in the beleaguered city of Chicago, have to pay for these hypocrites to tell us that we don't need a gun, but keep on walking. There's nothing to see here with all the guards around me.
Exactly.
I have to apologize. Skype keeps on kicking me off, so I'm trying to get that problem resolved. I just had to dial back into my own show.
What is your opinion? You too, Annie. I was disappointed. I was hoping last night Mitt Romney would spend a lot more time where he would mention the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. I was hoping he would emphasize it, almost like we do in many other things, or many other of his political agendas. I was really disappointed. I was hoping he would emphasize. Basically, the Second Amendment is there realistically for one purpose, and it's not only to defend ourselves and for food, but basically the survival against government. That he knew that government, basically, the right to bear arms was because someday we would have to fight government, as the Founding Fathers did.
If he says too much about that, then Obama can gut punch him and say, well, wait a minute. The kind of bans that I've been advocating would be based on yours, just like my Obamacare is based on your Romneycare. So you've been the laboratory that's had all the experiments that I thought were pretty cool. So Romney probably ought – well, at least he's had the decency to say that he has – in effect, he doesn't say he's flip-flop, but he does say, I support this, I oppose that. And to his credit, while I think he's still probably pretty much a default socialist in his thinking, he's not nearly the rigid, small-c communist ideologue that the president is. And so he'll be a lot easier for a Republican Congress to keep within bounds. And I think he's willing to talk the talk, and hopefully we'll have a Republican House that'll force him to walk the walk.
Well, that we have to pray for.
Yep.
That's something that I've been
arguing with people on, about, because some people turn around and say, well, I'm not even going to go out to vote. It's like, say, you have just handed Obama a vote then. And they don't realize that.
Exactly right. That would be the quickest and easiest way. Look, if anybody has any doubt what a serious threat Obama is to our freedom, go get the book called The Communist by Paul Kengor. He's a professor at Grove City College. Yeah. Admittedly, he's a conservative, and the college is too. So that makes all their scholarship suspect. I understand that. And he meticulously documents the mentor of Obama during his teen years was a Communist Party of the United States of America membership number 47544. And in another book, I don't have it in front of me, you actually can see a picture of that membership card. This was the man who spent all kinds of time, lived across the street from in Hawaii, lived across the street from Obama, and poured himself into young Obama and taught him that America bad, communist good, Joe Stalin democracy, East European takeover good for those people, our opposition bad for them. I mean, a down-the-line Soviet apologist during the war, in the run-up to the war, first Hitler bad, then Hitler good because Hitler with Stalin, and then finally Hitler bad after he attacks Matushka Rus, the motherland of the Soviet Union. And so the guy was a despicable America hater, an enslaver, a supporter of the enslavement of millions of people. That was Obama's mentor. No wonder he went on a groveling apology tour, particularly to some of the thuggiest Muslim rulers in the world. This is a war to the death. And I'm kind of with Mark Levin, the talk show host that has maintained more than once, it is paramount in this election that we get rid of Obama. And if all I got to vote for is an orange juice can, then I'm voting for the orange juice can. Well, when I go to vote, I'm seriously telling you, I'm thinking about taking an orange juice can in with me. And when somebody says, what are you taking that in for? I want to make sure I know who I'm voting for.
I like that. I especially like the imitation of Mark Levin. That was just about perfect.
That certainly was. I was like, dang, that was really good. I'm just disappointed overall is that you would think as a society, we would understand and we would appreciate just what the heroes and veterans have done, going back to the days of the Declaration of Independence, our founding fathers in the Civil War, just every war we have fought, that basically the right to bear arms is something that was fought for, no different than our freedoms. I mean, they go hand in hand. You cannot support liberties unless you support life. And life is preserved from a firearms standpoint that people have always, this is going back even after World War II, the Battle of Athens, where individual Americans saw corruption within their own local metros or cities and have taken them back.
Isn't that the name of a movie that was made around that time, the Battle of Athens?
Yeah, it was an actual event, yeah.
It was an actual event, and it was memorialized in a movie, which I saw the last part, which is the quote-unquote good part, where the good folks finally decide they've had enough election theft. They get their guns, and they hole up the authorities in a bank or a municipal building, and they have a shootout, and finally the corruptocrats had to surrender. And they would have remained under the thumb of those corruptocrats had they not had and been willing to use their guns. That was such a seminal part of American history, and I didn't even know about it until about 10 years ago. That's how down the Orwellian memory hole so many of our key historical events have been placed.
Oh, that's the shameful part. Shameful part, because history is not being taught properly. They're only picking and choosing instead of being honest about every event. Speaking about things that they're not being honest about also. We've got this new small arms treaty in the UN, and one of the major reasons why we need to get rid of Obama is to prevent that treaty from coming out of the UN.
Right.
But he has, from as soon as they issue that treaty and it gets into his hands, he can sign it. Once it goes to the Senate, they can bring it up any time they want. So all they need is a democratically controlled Senate with a guarantee to pass, and then we can kiss our guns goodbye.
The good news is that it's certainly dead for now. They have realized that when 50 senators sign, actually over, a little bit over, sign a letter saying, you bring that before me and I'm voting against it. Well, they can only lose 34 votes, actually 33. If they lose 34, they're toast. And so there's almost twice as many pledged to vote against as are needed to kill it. So even in Harry Reid's Senate, Democrats are running for the fire escape because they don't want to be caught in that kind of a mess. They know that the gun issue is lethal. I'm not sure the Republicans have got the memo yet. You'd think they frankly, if I were Mitch McConnell, bless his heart, I would be calling to bring up the treaty. I'd be taunting them to bring up the treaty. I'd be giving speeches on dare you to bring up the treaty, because that would finish off even more of them than are going to get finished off, Lord willing, this year.
Oh, absolutely. But what's scary is what is inside the treaty. Now, am I correct in saying that Iran is in charge of the committee that's writing this treaty?
I believe that is correct, and we don't really know for a fact what's in the treaty because this most transparent of all administrations has not made that information public. But we can let's say that the treaty is not going to pass even if Obama gets reelected. Here's how I see him proceeding. Based on his overturning the amnesty law, his violating various gun laws by imposing certain measures on gun stores that are not permitted by law, and other areas where he has just absolutely ignored the law, I guess requiring hospitals to supply abortifacients is another thing. Anyway, the list just is endless as the executive tyranny that Obama is exercising. Given that, if he were to be reelected, I would almost lay a bet that an edict would go out from the Justice Department's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives telling gun stores, you will lose your license in either of two ways. If you sell a handgun above caliber 380, because that's the way they do it in Europe, or if you sell a semi-automatic rifle that accepts a box magazine, in other words, quote-unquote, an assault weapon. And stores would have to clear that inventory, otherwise they're out of business because they have their business license at the mercy of the ATF. And the only way a store could continue selling that kind of firearm would be if they were in a county, and there are such counties that had a sheriff that said to the ATF, you come in here and try to arrest my gun store sellers, I'm arresting you. And I'm not letting you out until you promise to get out of my county. And because they can do that constitutionally and are doing it in other areas which fall outside the powers delegated to the federal government, Article 1, Section 8. So in some places they don't want to allow residents into a national forest and they put up a berm. And the sheriff goes out and says, we're clearing that berm, and if you don't like it, I'm arresting you. And in other cases, the Forest Service doesn't want to allow deadwood to be hauled out to reduce the likelihood of a forest fire taking off. As, by the way, those access roads, not only for people enjoying them recreationally, but also to allow fire equipment in the case of a fire breaking out. Or one of my favorite, a GOA member, sheriff of Elkhart County, Indiana, stood up for a sheriff that was being threatened by the Food and Drug Administration that thinks raw milk is horrible and was threatening because his milk was crossing state lines after co-ops took it and they sold it to people in Michigan. He got a hold of the FDA, and he said, if you put a foot on that farmer's land, I'm arresting you. And the attorney wrote back and said, well, you try that, we're arresting you. And Sheriff Rogers, in so many words, said, well, bring it on. And that was back in November. And they are still buying milk, raw milk, in Michigan, across that line from Elkhart County, Indiana. That's what sheriffs can do. And that's really, as long as John Boehner and Mitch McConnell continue to be the only known vertebrates that can't walk upright, as long as they won't defund the kind of abusive agencies that we suffer from in Washington, sheriffs can do that. Not in every state. They've kind of made them eunuchs in New Jersey by defunding. They got rid of them by referendum, by the very big mistake of the people of Connecticut. But in most states of the country and in most counties, the sheriff is the top cop. He's the only cop that's elected directly by the people. So whether it's FBI or county, doesn't matter. He can tell them, out of my county. And throughout a lot of the South and the Midwest and the Mountain West, that's and into the West Coast. You've got Northern California counties and rural Oregon and Washington counties where sheriffs have confronted the feds and told them out. And naturally, the media doesn't want the word out on that, and so they report that not. But it's up to us to talk about things like that, because that means that the election of a sheriff is a big deal. And most sheriffs, if I understand correctly, have this kind of power in Pennsylvania. And that means when you elect a sheriff, that's perhaps the most important vote you're going to cast on that election day.
Absolutely. And we do have sheriffs here in South Carolina, and ours is definitely elected. So I know he would not let them come in here and try to take our guns away. Matter of fact,
good.
South Carolina has some of the best carry laws.
In fact, I believe it's the sheriff around Spartansburg that told ladies that, look, if you want to be safe, get a concealed carry permit.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was. I believe that was last year.
Yes.
That was funny.
Yes, I thought that's great. I know he must have made a few liberals' head explode.
Well, listen, there's a new thing out going around out there on ways they're trying to take the guns away from us. And it happened to two people that I've been able to confirm. One was a fellow radio host, Jason Ergoff. I believe he was in Virginia. The other one was a Marine, Brandon Robb. Someone makes a phone call to a police department, whatever, and says, this person has some nasty postings on their Facebook page, or I know them for a fact to be wanting to harm someone or harm themselves. So they get these mental health warrants, and they arrest the individuals on a mental health warrant, hold them in psychiatric wards. And in most cases, it takes an attorney in order to get these people released, but now the federal government can take the guns away. Have you been hearing about this?
I heard about his particular case, and I have heard of others similar. And what's important to know is that the word warrant should not be conjoined, although that's what was done, so you're correctly quoting, but it should not be conjoined with the word mental health. Mental health authorities, quote-unquote, issue orders. They don't go to a court and say, bring this guy to court, tell him he better get a lawyer because I got something against him and I want to get a warrant to do this, that, or the other thing. When an agency doesn't do that, they don't have any constitutional authority. They should be resisted by constitutional sheriffs. And that you put your finger on something that's very serious. The reason we spent at Gun Owners of America so much time and money opposing zero care, as I call Obamacare, is that there's a key provision in there that says that a drone anywhere in the federal government can paw through records that are required to be electronically available to pawing through and looking for a diagnosis that, in their opinion, would indicate that you might be a danger to self or others. Well, if you think that could be the case, go to court, get a warrant, and then you can do something lawfully about it. But to just, we had a member call us even before Zero Care, and the Veterans Administration had been turning over this kind of data to the FBI National Crime Information System, the instant check so-called system, which is highly unconstitutional, and said, hey, I renewed my concealed carry permit down here in Arkansas, and 4 days later, ATF comes, it's denied, and 4 days later, ATF comes and collects all my guns. No due process, no nothing. This is this is what happened in Kafka's novels. This is what happened in Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia, where people were in jail and they really didn't have any idea why.
Yeah, that I found absolutely amazing. And it really is disturbing, because now this person has a mental health diagnosis.
Yeah, the burden of proof is on him to clear his record. Just the opposite of the way it's supposed to work in America. This, if I may quote the president about reckless deficits, that's un-American.
Absolutely. And it's not just the gun aspect of it. The person now will have difficulty in obtaining a job with this mental health diagnosis.
Yes. Yes.
So they're actually denying them a livelihood.
Yes.
And it's disturbing that they're going after bloggers, they're going after military, you know, people that have the ability to reach out and speak the truth. And that is very, very scary.
And right now, in the short run, the only way to have at least a partial block is to live in a county where the sheriff is going to say, no, you're not going to do that. And if you try it, I'll arrest you. Now, say that it's a small county. Maybe it only has 50 deputies, 15, 20,000 population. The sheriff, I've been in such a county in New Mexico, and the sheriff knows that it's not just his 50, 60 guys. It's that 200-plus man militia, two of whom are known to have 50 cals, who have communicated their total willingness and support of the sheriff's willingness to be deputized and to come under his lawful authority. And, you know, whether it's a forest fire in the mountains on the Sierras in the southeast part of the state, or whether it's a federal fire coming from who knows where, they're willing to take the sheriff's back and to raise that right hand and to come under his authority and be available. And in that particular county of Lincoln, I was told that these 200-plus folks have a battle bag 24/7 wherever they are with their vehicle. And they can be anywhere in that county in approximately an hour, maybe longer if it's from corner to corner. But they'll be there fast. And that means they're willing to tell the feds, hey, we're part of the sheriff's posse, and we're here to enforce what the sheriff says.
That's awesome. That is absolutely
exciting as it can be.
It is. I like that. Hey, listen, we do have a caller. Let's see what the caller wants. Thomas, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. You have a question or a statement? Thomas? Okay. I guess Thomas...
maybe we answered his question.
Oh. Can you hear
Thomas,
me now? Yeah, can you hear? Sorry about that. I accidentally muted myself and I was talking. So, sorry about that. I do want a new president. That's what I want. But my statement is this. Just listening to, you know, the stories that you shared about the feds attacking the guns and stuff like that, that brings up something interesting that just happened to me yesterday. Twitter attacked my they suspended my account for my conference. And as Annie, as you and Cool Mike and all of you know, they've done that to a lot of conservative Twitter accounts, where they've put them in Twitter gulag, as they call it. Well, anyway, they ended up restoring my account, but I contacted a friend on Facebook, and I asked him, I said, do you know of any conservative attorney generals or attorneys generals? And I told him what happened, and he told me to send the information to him, everything that happened, because here's the point. This is the point I'm trying to make. They're going to keep doing this stuff to us until we do something about it. And myself and quite possibly it's going to end up being a whole bunch of other people, we're going after Twitter for their blatant discrimination against conservatives, because you guys have seen all the hatred that's been on Twitter against the Ann Romney, calling for her death, saying the vile, nasty stuff about Mia Love. You know, and Twitter's not pulling those pages, letting them stay there as if it's, oh, freedom of speech. It is time for us as people to show them who's the boss. And this, you know, and this is my statement. I believe that we have some type of legal recourse when it comes to them taking our guns. Am I right in that?
Oh, yeah. We certainly do. And I think, happily, we're a long way from that. I think the government has a certain fear of the American people, armed as we are. And that's exactly what the Second Amendment was always all about. I've come to the point where I don't even think the Second Amendment extends to self-defense and hunting. I think that's among the unenumerated rights in the Ninth Amendment. The Second Amendment, the context of the Second Amendment is keeping the government under control, the way the British citizens, the British subjects living in America finally had to come to the realization they were going to have to do that with the British Crown and Parliament, and resorted to arms, and instead of continuing as British subjects, they emerged as American citizens.
Yep, that is true. That is true. They tried to hamstring us, to say the least, and it didn't quite wash with the early settlers. Thankfully.
That's right. That's exactly right. They had come over here to be free, particularly for religious reasons, because those were the reasons they were primarily being persecuted in Europe. And when the long hand of tyranny extended over, here they only had to hack out a living from a wilderness, eventually, not immediately, but eventually had to defend themselves against the native population, and then to have to deal with a bunch of jerks back at the metropole. No thanks. We're out of here.
Now, you are also a member of the Third Rail Radio, our friend John Selk. Tell us about the Town Crier program they have there.
Well, it's a boring. We haven't seen much happening with it, but it's one more effort to get conservative, constitutional, Christian voices addressing the issues of the day, so that the Democrat media will be sure to have less and less of what they used to have was a total monopoly. When I was growing up, and until probably, I would say 15 years ago, they pretty much had it their way. The one exception was when direct mail came into its own, and that was the way primarily that Ronald Reagan was able to communicate directly to American voters. And then when they did finally have to have him in front of a camera, he just ran circles around them because he was so accomplished and so avuncular. How could you not like Ronald Reagan? And so that was the beginning of the end. And they've not surrendered willingly. They continue to fight, but they are defending a smaller and smaller audience, and they're becoming shriller and shriller. And I think a lot more people are saying, what is that guy's problem? Does he need to go to the bathroom or something?
Also many times.
Absolutely. Because I became one of the Town Criers, and I'm looking forward to whenever they shoot out something that's really important. I came across this on, believe it or not, Cronkite News. The survivors from the Tucson shooting have already given Eric Holder a petition asking for tighter gun control, insisting on better or different background checks.
Some people just don't learn from experience. You would think it might have occurred to them, because it does to victims of crime many times. Man, I should have had a gun. And in fact, they will sometimes recount thinking, what was I thinking leaving my gun at home or in the car? Well, there may have been a sign that said, no guns in here. Well, you know, let me just say what a lot of GOA members have told me. If you effectively conceal, there's no harm. Doesn't matter what some bedwetting policy would have. If you're going into some place and you're intending no harm and you successfully conceal, there's not going to be an issue. It's just not going to come up.
Yeah, people don't understand that, you know, if you have a responsible gun owner, they are less likely to be involved in any sort of a shooting unless they are attacked.
But yes, that's a really good point. And I don't know how many gun owners have told me just that. That it's kind of like that science fiction writer Heinlein had said, an armed society is a polite society. You don't want to speed when a gun is in your car because you don't want to do anything to draw attention to yourself, particularly if you're driving through New Jersey or something like that. And you keep the speed limit. You drive responsibly. And certainly if you see somebody cutting in and out of traffic, acting like a jerk, you just slow down or pull over. You get out of the way. You do not want to provoke a situation. So the armed person is the last person in the world that is likely to be causing trouble.
Well, it's the one with an illegal weapon that you will expect the trouble from. And that's what people don't understand. When you have a shooting like we had in Manhattan just recently, two officers, here they were at the right spot at an unfortunate time. And yes, some bystanders were hit, but the only people that were killed was the one that the perpetrator was shooting at and the perpetrator himself.
Right. They did manage to fill him fairly full of lead. And boy, did that save the taxpayer a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Now, back in March.
If you think about it, it's that realistically, if you look back upon the Second Amendment, how awesomely written. I mean, we like to think of ourselves as smart and as. These people were just the way it's written. And I mean, basically, they're saying right now, if next to Larry in the chair was one of the founders, they're saying exactly what Larry's saying. That's exactly what they're saying.
Right.
We want to put our hands in the, we want to put our trust in the politicians. Well, you know, I think the best person to protect our families are ourselves. And
you know,
I think it's, you know, in a lot of ways, too, if Obama or someone were next to Larry, they'd be trying to paint Larry as some sort of outcast. I mean, it just this is so important
that
we have the gun owners of America. Oh, go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Janet Napolitano, who says that folks who think the way we've been speaking are the terrorists that the cops ought to be watching out for, she's the same reliable authority who has said that nobody has crossed our border. Huh? Is she Inspector Magoo or something?
I think so. I like that, Inspector Magoo. No one has crossed our borders. Gee, I wonder how those 9/11 hijackers got in.
Yeah. Well, they flew in on a plane and overstayed their visa. It was simple, and we don't seem to care whether they do that or not. I don't think we even make an effort to go find them, even at an address fictitious that it might have been that they had given. Make no effort. And it's just stunning that we are so willing to be this porous, and then she wants us to be disarmed as well? I don't think so.
Yeah, there's also, aren't they being sued for prosecutorial discretion where they said, we really don't want you to enforce the laws, so, you know, if you catch an illegal, you got to let them go?
That's what the Border Patrol Union is suing them for precisely, is my understanding. They're obviously outraged, and it puts them more at risk. Here they have an inherently dangerous job to start with. They catch one of these illegals, And often, by the way, I should point out, they're not dangerous criminals. They may be criminals. They're not dangerous at all. They're probably some poor schlub out in the Maricopa County desert that's been dumped by the coyote. Maybe they went lame. Maybe it was a pregnant mother that couldn't keep up or whatever. And these guys save so many lives, getting them hydrated before they finally give up the ghost. But it's not always that easy. Sometimes they come upon, as Brian Terry did, guys that are walking around with guns that we've put in their hands that are used to kill people like Brian Terry. Janet Reno is just, she's one of the biggest reasons we got to get rid of President Zero.
Oh, also, didn't she just recently also disarm pilots in the cockpit too?
She defunded the training program, which is required for a pilot to be able to get trained. So she cut off any new pilots from being involved.
Here we are. We just went through 9/11, and one of the most your front line for preventing a hijacker from taking the plane again is the pilot. What is she relying on?
Until sometime close to 1970, and I've talked to people who did it quite frequently. In fact, I knew a bodyguard for Barry Goldwater, and he said, I was just an unofficial bodyguard. I had no credentials, but I knew him, and he wanted me as part of his team. And we'd go right on airplanes, armed. I had it under my jacket, and that was it. That's all there was to it. And you didn't hear a whole lot of hijacking and stewardesses getting their throats cut and stuff like that. And then we started to think, it's like every plane is now a gun-free zone. Stuck on stupid.
Well, are the air marshals allowed to carry?
The air marshals are allowed to carry if they have been trained. So they are, but there's only so many of them, and they tend to concentrate on flights going in out of New York City, Washington, D.C., other signature spots of America's civilization, political power, financial power, and so forth. So there's an awful lot of flights, say, going into Chicago, where my guess is there aren't that many air marshals, unless they happen to be on a segment that just takes them through Chicago on the way to New York or D.C.
How about we completely get rid of the TSA and we make the airlines? I mean, who hauls around the money like banks? Do banks ask the government to protect their money? Of course not. We need to get rid of the TSA. It's up to the airlines to protect the passengers.
Yes, because whatever the airlines would do, you can bet, is going to have a certain element of courtesy because they depend on the customer. The TSA doesn't depend on anybody. There's no connectivity to reality in their case. So I absolutely support that notion that we got to get rid of the TSA. Nothing would be better than having the TSA.
Well, maybe we should do more like what Switzerland does. Every adult citizen is required to have a firearm.
At least all the men, and maybe now they've extended it to the women, could be. But all the men, when they hit a particular age, I think it's 17, are given a fully automatic battle rifle, and at a minimum they are required to spend 2 weeks a year in what amounts to a rolling training of segments of the population so that there's always a freshly trained batch, retrained batch, every 2 weeks. And then if you're a pilot, you, of course, have to train a lot longer. But they only have a professional full-time military of about 1,500. And all the rest, as the German general staff reported to Hitler when they were trying to figure out how they could conquer Switzerland, Switzerland is an army. So your army has to be able to sustain the losses of a huge army, the Swiss population, and still continue fighting your other objectives. and they calculated that they would lose at least half of their army if they were to attack Switzerland. Even if they won, they would have been cut in half. And so Hitler, as much as he wanted to invade Switzerland, never went there.
That's a thought. You know, and their murder rate and crime rate is so much lower than it is here.
It's one of the lowest in the world.
Yeah, and when you compare the stats with Washington, D.C., Chicago, and then Zurich and any other city inside Switzerland, it's night and day.
Yeah, and Switzerland is starting to slip under the spell of the politically correct, but still in at least half of the landmass, the more rural parts of the country, it's like the four states in the United States that require no concealed carry permits to carry concealed. You just do it. And that would help explain why there's either a machine gun in a guy's home in Zurich or that single mom out in Boondocksburg in Switzerland probably has at least a 9mm waiting for you after you invade her home.
Yeah, and what I loved is, I believe it was just last year or was it earlier this year, they actually had a public referendum asking whether or not, you know, to give up their guns, and unanimously the people voted to keep their guns.
They did. It was at least a majority, but Switzerland hasn't been overcome yet, although I think there are signs that, well, in part because they are interested in, were interested. I'm not sure they're so interested now after the Euro's tanking, but they were being seduced into nutty legislation in order to be able to join the European Union. And now that it looks like, oh yeah, join the European Union and have your throat cut in order to help Greece and Italy and Spain come out of their economic spirals. Yeah, this is that'd be a really good thing, and I'm sure the voters would just love it when they go to vote for people that have done that to them. So hopefully Switzerland will be pulling back from the brink now that these financial crises are sweeping Europe.
All right. Well, I got one other question. They recently passed that reciprocity law, and I'm not exactly sure I completely understand that law. How does it work from state to state? Because I'm in a state where, you know, you can have a carry permit, but you have to go through the class and you have to go through the background check, of course. But also, you're allowed to carry in your car. You can leave it locked in the car. You can't have it concealed on you. How would that translate into going into another state? How do if they have stricter laws?
You at the moment, you have to have reciprocity that has been formally worked out by the authorities in the two states involved. There's a bill in the United States Congress in both houses that, and Senator Thune's bill is one that might actually end up becoming law this year because that's how potent the gun issue is. But in any case, his measure says that if you have a permit in, say, South Carolina where you said you are and you want to drive over to Tennessee, the only state that this wouldn't apply to is Illinois because it's the only state that has Zippo Zero concealed carry provision. It's prohibited. But otherwise, even if you were to go to New York City, which is a virtual ban on concealed carry, you would be able to carry as long as you obeyed the requirements about maybe it's not, don't go into a church, or don't go into a school, or don't go here, don't do that. So as long as you're conversant with those different, as it were, speed laws, it's just the same as right now when you go from South Carolina to New York City. Whatever the right-on-turn, left-on-turn, municipal speed limits, all the different varieties of traffic regulations that there are, you're good to go just as long as you conform to whatever the differences are. And it would be the same thing under Senator Thune's bill. So if you were to go from New York City, where, you know, we dare you to get a permit, to Vermont, Wyoming, Arizona, or Alaska, fly to a convention or whatever in one of those states, even though you don't have a permit in New York City under Senator Thune's bill, you'd be able to get a gun out of your luggage, which would be a legal way to travel, in a locked box that you declared when you checked into at the airport. And when you get to the parking lot and you're getting into your rental car in Burlington or in Anchorage or Phoenix or Cheyenne, wherever it might be, you put that puppy in your purse or your pocket, and you're good to go. You're perfectly legal. And then you go back home, and it's like going back into jail.
Well, so that, in other words, then, if I have a concealed permit here and I go into New York, I can't have a carry it concealed.
Not now, but if Thune's bill passes, you could. And so if they had a number of conventions in New York City, just saying, and it brought in people from a lot of other states where it was much easier to get a permit, as it is in South Carolina, at any one given time, there'd probably be more people legally carrying concealed that were not resident of New York City because of all those convention goers that might have brought their concealed carry piece legally.
They may have found the crime rate just dropped when they have a gun convention in town.
Or any other convention where it's known that people from almost anywhere else. Because you can get a permit in Connecticut. You can get a permit in New Hampshire. You can get a permit in upstate New York. You just really can't get one in New York City.
Now, is there any one place people can go and check what the gun laws are for carrying or possession from state to state?
If I've got this wrong, you can easily search it because I've done this in the past. But I think it's concealedcarry.org has a nice state-by-state map of the different levels of carry that's available and what the particular state laws are as of the assembly of that information. As always, you can't be completely sure. It's not binding legal advice, so beware. But yes, to the best of your ability, you can find these things out.
All right. Well, Larry, it has been a very enjoyable afternoon, and the hour and a half has just flown past.
Well, I've enjoyed being with you, and I'm really glad you're doing what you're doing, and I hope you're able to do it for a long time.
I hope,
Larry,
so,
you know,
too.
Just in my closing comment to you, I think it's wonderful. Not only are you a believer, obviously, in the Gun Owners of America, but you also recognize the NRA, although standing up for firearms, is also a political action committee with not always the best interests of people in mind. It's more like a business, and I think it's wonderful that a parent sometimes has to spank their kids. And a lot of these groups are very good groups, but they also get involved in the political end of the spectrum. I think you are just a role model organization, and my friend, very, very much enjoyed your talking. Your group, definitely, I'm going to spread the word on Facebook, and you and your family are definitely in my prayers. Thank you for your time.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Larry, and we welcome you back anytime.
Well, thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
That's Larry Pratt with Gun Owners of America. What a fantastic guest.
That man knows his shit, as we say. Wow.
Oh, he should. He better.
Yeah, I mean, his knowledge of when we were talking about abroad, as far as Switzerland and these other, I mean, his knowledge on that is very, very, it's very keen because, I mean, I'm not up to date really with a lot of the history he talked about with Hitler. Just a great organization, I'll tell you, that most people, I posted the link in the chat room, and I think many people should definitely check it out.
Absolutely. It's gunowners.org. Just to let people know, we will be back again this Tuesday, and our special guest on Tuesday will be Dr. Michael Kaufman, who happens to be an expert on Agenda 21. That's going to be a great show.
That's going to be a real barn burner right there. You know,
and then, and then we're going to follow up that Friday with Richard Mintner, who's got a new book out about the Obama White House administration called Leading from Behind. And some of you may have seen him with his interviews up on Fox News and some of the night shows and everything else. So that's going to be really fun, too. So we got two absolutely jam-packed shows coming up.
Yes, absolutely. I am so ready for Tuesday. Agenda 21 is a great topic.
Okay. And actually, Mike will be hosting the show. I will be calling in as co-host, depending upon whether or not I can find a place with Wi-Fi, because I will be out of town and doing a remote location. So we'll see how that works.
Now, is that Tuesday?
Yeah. Next Tuesday.
Everyone, while Annie and Yanni are lounging around in Florida, blowing all kinds of money, sucking them down, getting tan. Of course, I'll have to mind the store like the kids always, stocking the shelves and working hard.
I wanted to thank everyone that was inside the chat room. There's some lively chat out there. A lot of people that I didn't have a chance to say hi to, want to thank them for their participation. We got Reactionary, who has his show, Red, White, and Blue, and Dr. Jones with the C-Rep Report. So we have a good audience, and it was a good afternoon. So have a safe and happy and healthy weekend, guys. Remember, it's a holiday weekend, so be careful when you're out there driving. Look out for the other guys, because they're not looking out for you. So take care, and until Tuesday, we'll see you again, same bat time, same bat station. Good night, and God bless.
God bless, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Please join me this September 15th when, along with the Lieutenant Dan Band, I will return to Beaufort, South Carolina for the third annual Lieutenant Dan Weekend for an evening of fun, music, and show of support for our nation's military and their families. We'd also like to invite you or your company to join us in showing thanks to our nation's most severely wounded veterans by honoring a hero of your choice with a Freedom Flag. These freedom flags will be flown at the concert and are a perfect way to honor a special veteran in your life. 100% of the tax-deductible donation for a freedom flag will be used by all the Volunteer Independence Fund to support those most severely wounded veterans of the War on Terror. Myself and the rest of the Lieutenant Dan Band look forward to seeing you all once again this September, and I thank you for your support.